You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers from the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily local sports podcast network. I am Chris Manning, your host and the site manager over at fearthesword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers blog. If you aren't already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Megaphone, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. A five-star review, particularly on Apple Podcasts, is the best way to support the show. And you can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs, and me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Rights. On today's show, with a break in the schedule, with the Cavs playing the Knicks tonight in a game I don't really think we need an in-depth preview of, I'm going to give you five storylines I think are most worth your attention through the rest of the season, and then also look at the couple things right that will happen right when the season ends that will shape the summer. Now, there are, of course, going to be things worth your attention outside these five in particular, but these are the five I am most interested in tracking. I would love to hear yours as well, so if you want to submit yours in email form, I'll read some of them on the show. You can do that to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. And in the future weeks, we're going to set up a Google voicemail box. So if you want to share a question via audio instead of sending it in, or have a take you want to share, you can record that, send it to me there, and maybe you'll get your voice heard on this show as well. Okay, so storyline number one for me is that Kevin Love's impact is already being felt. I wrote this at Fear the Sword yesterday. You can read that. Click the article link in the show notes. But my question here is, will it sustain the rest of the way? As the stats show, the Cavs are averaging possessions that are 1.5 seconds quicker on average with him on the floor. That's a metric that's similar to Steph Curry's number, and it's faster than Russell Westbrook's number. Those are the two guys that are the most comparable here, and that's because those are guys that are taking a lot of quick shots. That is what the Cavs are doing with Kevin Love on the floor. They're taking much faster shots. They're designing sets around quicker actions. In the last three games where Kevin Love has played a normal number of minutes, perhaps a bit below what he will play when he's fully back, the Cavs offensive rating is around 111. That takes them to a respectable position in the slightly in the upper half of the league, as opposed to being near the very bottom of the league in the bottom 10 / bottom 5 or so. With Love, we need to see if he can stay healthy and sustain it. We need to see how he holds up once his energy level gets up and he starts playing more minutes and that minutes restriction is off. Right now, Larry Drew is taking him out of big chunks of the game because he wants him on the floor at the end of games, and that's kind of throwing his rhythm off. It's an adjustment. It's not necessarily a natural way for him to be playing. We'll also need to see how many games he plays. For instance, this weekend, does he play two halves of a back-to-back? We don't know that yet. And specifically in those situations, you know, does he play full minutes on those back-to-backs? How does his body respond to those? And then also, we're going to see how he helps different players. I really think the results are really, really good for him. I think it's made me really interested to see what a team with him, Sexton, Osman, next year's top pick, that other first-round pick, and Love, plus those other pieces, is going to look next season. But I want to see what it looks like the rest of the way. I want to see what it looks like if he can sustain this, if some of the really positive things we're seeing are for real. Because if they are, it's very encouraging. This is a modified version of Minnesota Kevin Love. He's not holding the ball as much. He's not operating off that elbow as much. It's quick threes. It's post-up still. But it's three. It's basically a big version of the modern wing where it's rim and the perimeter. And it's at a quick pace, and I'm very interested to see if they can keep that up. Secondly, my number two storyline is, how does Colin Sexton finish this season? Sexton's three-point numbers remain pretty good, and he's going to, very soon, beat Kyrie Irving's franchise record for three-pointers made as a rookie. I think Sexton's also looked really solid with Kevin Love, where his pace is able to be shown off. His best attribute is probably his speed. And with Kevin Love back and Kevin Love flinging passes up off of rebounds and off inbounds passes, that speed is being more regularly used. When you watch the Cavs play the Knicks on Thursday, just watch how much more often Sexton is pushing the ball off a rebound or off an inbounds pass, specifically when he's on the floor with Love. It's jarringly more often than we'd seen previously, where he would kind of dribble the ball slowly up the floor. It makes everything better for him in the offense because it's making Sexton more effective. It's making the offense not get bogged down and play into some of its bad tendencies. The big thing here also with Colin Sexton is we need to watch how he's shooting at the rim. It's a major concern for me that he isn't shooting well there as of right now. So far this year, Sexton is shooting 48.7% under 5 feet. Over the last 5 games, that's a tick better at 50%. But in the last 3 games with Love, including the game the other night where he only made 3-pointers against Portland, he's at 38.5%. If you want to look at what a good number for this would be, De'Aaron Fox for the Kings was at 56.2% last year, and then jumped up to 61% this year as he's had this real breakout season. It's not all on Sexton. I do think he does need to add some muscle and get better at the reps and things. But he needs to take a leap there if he's going to kind of reach the potential and be as good as the Cavs hope he can be. On the flip side, it's also interesting to see how he's going to play off the ball more. There's a number of possessions you'll see when you watch him where he's starting in the corner and then cutting and getting the ball. He's not being force-fed the ball as the only creator. And I think that tells you of what they think his role is going to be moving forward. They want him to be a malleable player. And then defensively, he's a rookie point guard, so he's bad on that end by default. But is he going to keep being a little better, a little bit smarter, a little less chaotic and more aware? He's still a ridiculously bad defender. He's in the bottom 3 as rated out by defensive RPM, with only Jordan Clarkson and Trae Young being worse. The guy that is ahead of him on that list is a full point better than him at negative 2.95 defensive RPM, and Sexton is at negative 3.95. The Cavs are also 6.03 points better per 100 possessions on defense when he's off the floor. When he's on the floor, they are defensively 3.5 points worse per 100 possessions than the Cavs are overall for the course of the season at 106 points per 100 possessions. So when Sexton is on the floor statistically, they go from being historically bad on defense to even more historically bad on defense. But when you look at the film, he is making better reads. He's sticking through pick and rolls better. He's being a little bit more active. There is some progress there. But I think offense is sort of where he's going to make his bread and butter. He's going to make his money on that end of the floor. Does he get better at the rim is sort of my big thing to watch for him. Does he do the other stuff better too? Defensively, can he at least be smarter and hang with stuff better as we've seen him do of late? Even if the numbers for the season paint the picture that he's a disaster on that end, and it's going to take him a while to get better. We're going to take one quick break here, hear from our fantastic sponsors, and then we're going to be back to get into storylines number 3 and number 4 for the rest of the season. So stay tuned for more of this episode of Locked On Cavaliers for Thursday, February 28th. And we are back for today's episode of Locked On Cavaliers. Again, I'm Chris Manning, your host. Find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWMWrights. Okay. Number 3 for me is how will the front court sort itself out? So I don't think John Henson's going to play a game for the Cavs this year. His future with the team and the big question around him is really if he's on the team after the summer. But we are going to see Tristan Thompson back at some point. We would assume so, at least. He is having some issues coming back and making it through practices due to that foot soreness. But when he plays, I would guess that he's probably going to go back to starting at center. He was really good before he got hurt. And despite these 2 injuries he's had, he's been pretty good, even though the injuries and the number of minutes he's already played are concerning for his future. You know, we need to see again if Kevin Love is going to play every night. Looking at Ante Zizic, he's been really solid the last few weeks. He's averaging 10.8 points, 7.3 rebounds, is shooting 65.4% from the field for the year for the last couple weeks, but he should keep playing. Larry Nance Jr. is obviously going to keep playing, and he's someone the Cavs have invested in already as part of their future due to the extension he signed earlier this year. David Nwaba is included in this too because he's going to play some of the 4 spot. This is going to matter now because it's going to impact the quality of basketball we're seeing the Cavs play. It's going to impact what lineups are successful, all of that. But it's also a preview of what is going to come for next season and the offseason. This is a roster that is full of bigs. They have, it's a position of strength for them. You know, it's obviously a weird time in the NBA to have your front court be a position of strength because front court play isn't as valuable. You want more wings, and the Cavs don't really necessarily have a lot of wings I would label as keepers. But they have bigs I like. I've become, for instance, really interested in what Ante Zizic could be because I think he's been really good the last few weeks. You look at Laren Ince. I think that's a good NBA player that has shown me passing and shooting things that make him more interesting. Tristan, if he could stay healthy, is still very valuable. Kevin Love is Kevin Love. And then John Henson isn't nothing. You know, he's not an all-star, but that guy's a good passer. He's a good rim protector. He's a good role guy. Like, that guy was a useful player with the Milwaukee Bucks. He just happens to have a wrist injury. And Marquese Chriss is there too, and he's a NBA player with who wears the number 3 and has a contract with the Cavaliers at the current moment. So there's just a lot going on there. It needs to be sorted out. It's a bigger question for the summer, but it will directly impact what we're seeing on the court from now until the end of the season in mid-April. One of the little storylines to watch in that bigger conversation is Larry Nance Jr.'s three-point shooting. It's probably what the one skill-based thing I will watch more than anything these next few weeks. So Nance is taking a three at least once every game now. February 2nd was the last time he didn't take a three in a game. But in watching the tape, watching live, watching when he takes threes, it's clear it's not an automatic shot for him yet. It's still not something that he's just going to do and fire up and just be super willing to take. But he's going to take them. He's getting more comfortable with it. I think the fact that he's taking them every game is a sign of that. But will he take three a game? Will he start making at least one a game instead of just taking one a game? That's something to watch, especially as the Cavs do continue to deploy him in situations where he does hang out on the perimeter. You know, you have him and Nwaba and Zizic sort of as a trio that we've seen on bench units sometimes. And that Nance and that pairing kind of has to be the floor spacer. And that could press him into taking more threes. Just something to watch there. Next, number 4. This is a very minor thing in the grand scheme of things. But I want to see what of the non-core players get chances to succeed and how they perform in the situation. So if you're looking at Brandon Knight, it looks like he's going to start and he's going to play a bunch, and I think that's fine. He's under contract next season. They need guards. They need a ball handler. I don't hate just having him play. Henson is obviously out, so he is not a factor in this. That leaves Marquese Chriss, and that leaves Nick Stauskas. Chriss has gotten more minutes to date. Chriss is the more explosive player of the two. He has had some really good games with the team early. He has had actually some pretty standout moments, and I gave him a lot of credit and give him a lot of credit for trying to make the most of his opportunity. But he's not good. he set a screen at the end of the first quarter of the Portland game. You can go find this on the NBA.com stats page. Just click Clarkson misses under his mid-field goals. It's his last shot in the first quarter. So they tried to run a pick and roll with a high pick and roll with Clarkson and Chriss. Marquese Chriss just went to set the screen but didn't actually make any physical contact. So Clarkson drove because he was like, okay, here's my screen. I'm going to go now. And when that happened, the two Portland defenders just gobbled him up, one on one side, one coming from the back, and Clarkson got blocked and the Cavs got a clean shot off. And it started because Chriss didn't set a screen. That's a normal thing for him. He moves a lot, he points his fingers a lot, and like is there, but he doesn't really always do anything. I'm just not that interested in Marquese Chriss. He's a good story. I hope he succeeds. He's really young. He, you know, it's not his fault he was taken probably higher than he should have been, but he's just not good. Now, Stauskas has had his issues so far, but he was a legit role player with the Trailblazers of the season before Jake Layman kind of pushed him out of the rotation. His numbers with the Cavs are not good. He's shooting a pretty terrible 27.3% on threes, which is supposed to be his best skill. So far with the Cavaliers, he's playing like 5 minutes a game. But to me, if you're looking at a guy that I think could make sense on a one-year deal next year or you know, could still be developed in a meaningful way, I think he has more utility than Chriss. I would like to see him get some more minutes, even if that means playing a little smaller, even if that means he's playing the three when he probably should be defending twos and you're going to be bad on defense anyway. I just think he has more potential value than Marquese Chriss. especially because of the logjam of bigs. The Cavs don't really need a reclamation project at the four spot or a guy that could play the five and, you know, does what Marcus Chris does. What they probably need to develop is wings. This roster has Jetty. It has Nwaba, who is, you know, who isn't a good shooter. Knight's, you know, functionally a one, but he's going to play some two. Clarkson and Delly are playing the, you know, off ball, but they're functionally guards. The Cavs need wings. Stauskas is a wing. He has a track record of being a decent shooter. And again, he was good with Portland this year before he kind of got bumped out of the rotation for a couple different reasons. So I would like to see more time invested in Stauskas. It will probably be telling if they don't, but I think there's more to be gained out of him than Marquese Chriss. We're going to take one more break, hear from our great sponsors once again, and then we're going to get into storyline number 5, and then the things to watch for when these storylines have resolved themselves and the season is over. So stay tuned for more of this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. We'll be right back. And we are back with the Locked On Cavaliers episode for Thursday, February 28th. I am Chris Manning from FeelTheSword.com. Again, find me on Twitter at CWMWrites. Okay, this is the big one, and this is probably the most fun one. It's the one that has Tankathon set as your new homepage in Google Chrome or in your browser of choice. Where are the Cleveland Cavaliers going to finish in the standings? And not how close did they come to making the playoffs or... are they better than some of the other bad teams? It's how bad are the Cavs, really? Right now, they are 2.5 games behind the Suns for the worst record in the league. They are behind the Knicks, so they're the number 3 bad team in the league right now. With Kevin Love back, it is abundantly clear that this is a more competent team. It pushes them more into the Bulls and Hawks realm of teams as opposed to the Knicks and the Suns. They are not good, but they are more competent. I would posit the Knicks and Suns, who the Cavs have just beaten, are way, way worse. What does help the Cavs here is that because Love missed so much and they were so bad for so long, unwatchable for really for so long, that the Bulls and Hawks are also probably a little bit better, a little more competent. The Bulls in particular are kind of hitting an offensive stride right now with LaVine and Markkanen. Trae Young is really freaking good for Atlanta. And the Grizzlies are really bad, too, in that next group, but they are 9.5 games back of the bottom three as I recorded this. That could have changed by the time you hear this, but they're pretty far back with not a ton of season left to go. If the Cavs do end up finishing with the third worst record in the league, that is a pretty good outcome. The lottery odds have changed. There is the chance they could fall back as far as number 7, because it is an option, and a real option at that. But finishing the bottom three is a good outcome for the season in that A, they will keep losing, and B, they will play quality basketball if they kind of finish at 3 and don't slip anymore. I think that's actually probably the best outcome for them, is that they are playing quality ball but still losing, because you'll see some growth, you'll feel good about Jetty and Colin and Nwaba and Love's progress as he comes back and all that, but they'll still have a good shot at getting the lottery pick they really need to continue to this rebuild. According to Tankathon as well, and keep this in mind, the Cavs do have the 9th hardest remaining schedule. So if you look at the teams they're sort of tanking off against, Phoenix has the 7th easiest schedule, so maybe they're going to pick up some easy wins. They're the Suns, so probably not, but possible. The Chicago Bulls, 10th easiest, the Knicks, 14th easiest, the Hawks, the 10th hardest, so they're right there with the Cavs. So the Cavs are going to like lose some games because they're going to be playing teams that are just not good enough to beat. The Portland game is an example of like they could play really well to their standard for 3 quarters and like maybe pull off a win and make it fun, but they're still going to lose. That's sort of what I mean here by ideal outcome. The bonus part of this here is, where do the Rockets finish? The Cavs would currently get the 21st pick, but if the Rockets keep winning and let's say the Celtics lose a little bit more, does that bump a little bit further? Could it go a little earlier in that first run? It's obviously going to convey this year and be another first round pick, but you know, how far does it go? And if you're wondering let's say if you're like, okay, the Cavs obviously in these you know, balanced draft odds, like finishing 1 would be best, but what would it mean if they slipped to 4? So let's say they slip spots with the Bulls. them, and take a pick as low as 8th. Now, that is only a 2.2% chance of happening. And, you know, if they were the worst team in the league, they would be guaranteed to pick in the top 5, with the most likely pick actually being number 5 at 47.9% there. And then to, you know, pick as low as 6. So there's some benefit of being one of the worst 3 teams. But with the Cavs, you know, likely they would, 6 has a, you know, more than a 0.25% chance of happening. The other ones are, the, you know, the same as the other 3 top teams. That's still better than being 4th or being 5th. So, you know, being 5th wouldn't be the worst thing necessarily, or being 3rd wouldn't be, being 4th wouldn't be the worst thing necessarily, you know, to correct myself there. But, you know, I think you're looking at 3 kind of being a sweet spot, probably the most realistic landing spot, because I think Phoenix and New York are just a lot worse than the Cavs right now. Okay, here's what you need to look for when all of these are wrapped up. When the season ends and you're like, what do I care about? What? And you've kind of processed everything. You've taken some time to maybe watch baseball or like care about the NFL draft or like process this Cavs season in some way. May 14th is the draft lottery date. So that is going to be thing number 2, I would guess, because we'll get to number 1 in a second. That is going to shape the summer. That is about a month after the season ends. Once we know where the Cavs are going to pick, so we're going to find out whether they're going to have a shot at RJ Barrett, or if they're going to basically get one and get Zion, or if they're going to be further back and that pick becomes a little bit more precarious. Those are sort of the things we're looking at there. That date will set the tone for the rest of the offseason, because if they get a pick that is beneficial and they get a, in a situation to pick up really maybe transcendent player, that's going to be a lot better for this group than picking like 7th. And like, you're like, do we have to take a point guard here, or because that's the best available player? Like, that's the difference there. So that's a really big date. The bigger one, and to me, this is the, I've said this before on the show, but the coaching hire, which is likely to happen before May 14th, I would be shocked if they don't have a coach within 2 to 3 weeks at the end of the season. I'm sure they're doing their research now. It would be malpractice if they did not, even if they aren't doing interviews right now. They're going to hire a coach that is going to be the shaper of Sexton and Jetty and the team's offense and the defense and whatever young players they get for the next couple seasons, unless it's like the Suns where they're like, we're just going to be crazy and maybe fire Igor Kokoschkov right now. That coach, whether it's Jordy Fernandez or Chris Gent or Mark Price or some other coach that has that player development background, that guy is going to need to be their Lloyd Pierce, need to be their Brett Brown. They're going to need that guy that is going to really propel that young group and develop them in a meaningful way. You know, you don't want it to be the guy that's going to stall them out, isn't the right fit with young players. They need to nail that hire. That is going to set the tone. You know, from there, obviously the draft is going to be a big thing. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about it. We have a whole segment on Friday's show dedicated to talking about that. Trades will happen. You know, J.R. Smith around the draft is probably going to get traded. You know, what happens with Tristan, who will be expiring next year? What happens with John Henson? There are big questions there. But for me, the offseason is going to be first shaped by those first two things that are going to happen. We're going to first see that coaching hire. We're going to see who the Cavs hire, what that coach is all about, what kind of scheme they're going to run, and get an idea of that right near the end of the season. We're going to move on from this Larry Drew era pretty quickly. Then we're going to see what kind of pick they're going to have. Is it going to be is it going to be 2 or 1, or is it going to be lower where that pick is a little bit trickier to make? Those things are going to set the tone for the rest of that offseason. It'll be certainly influenced by the 5 things and the many other factors we're going to kind of evaluate over the last chunk of this season. But those are the 2 things you look for right when the season ends. It's probably the 2 biggest things that will, and then in addition to the draft pick, these are the couple things that are really going to shape next season, or at least have a big part in shaping next season, and put the Cavs on a path for the next couple years. Those are big, big moments, and they're very big moments in this Cavs rebuild. So that's going to be it for today's show. We are going to be back tomorrow on March 1st. It's already March. That's crazy. With a recap of Cavs-Knicks at 7:30 p.m. in New York. And then a look at UNC's Nasir Little with our draft expert Trevor Magnotti. So Friday show, Cavs-Knicks recap, Nasir Little breakdown. If you have questions you want answered in our next mailbag, you can submit those to @LockedOnCavs on Twitter or to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. Probably do a mailbag soon-ish, if not right at the end of the regular season when things slow down a little bit, and you're going to be wanting to watch the good playoff basketball that's coming. Again, a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts guarantees your question gets answered. It's also the best way to support the show. At Fear the Sword, check out my story on Kevin Love. There's quotes in there from him and Jetty. You can, again, click the link in the show notes to go read it. Check out Cup of Cavs, our new daily news post that goes up every morning at 6 a.m. with links and stories you should read and a draft sim on Tankathon. And again, check out our coverage of Cavs Knicks. We'll have a game preview up as well as our 2-for-1 format story. So thank you for listening. This has been Locked On Cavaliers for February 28th, 2019. I'm Chris Manning. Find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWMWrights. Have a great Thursday. We'll talk to you tomorrow.